Welcome to This Is America in VOA Special English. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. This week on our program, we visit a small community built on the idea known as co-housing. We also hear from the nation's new poet laureate. And we look at interfaith marriage in the United States.
There are more than 150 co-housing communities across the United States. One of them is Tacoma Village Co-Housing here in Washington. The development has 43 units of attached housing in buildings grouped around a shared open space. About 60 adults and 22 children currently live there. The units are individually owned. The residents share a common building with a children's playroom, study room, and laundry machines. It also has a kitchen and a large area where the residents eat meals together several times a week. Sharon Valines was one of the first people to move into Tacoma Village Co-Housing when it opened in 2000.
What I like most is I know all my neighbors. You know, I mean, it's just like this big extended family.
In some ways, it seems like an old-fashioned village where everyone knows everyone else.
There's a Monday night group that consists of about 30 to 40 people. It varies. And two or three people will cook each week and serve the other people. We have a lot of potlucks where people bring things. That works very well.
The residents are from different generations and ethnic groups.
For me, the most important advantage for co-housing is diversity.
Abe Hussein and his wife moved to Tacoma Village 6 years ago. They used to live in New York State in a house with four bedrooms and even a swimming pool indoors.
One good thing about co-housing is a great place for raise kids. The children here, they don't have any strangers because they see their neighbors every day or every week.
Anne Zabaldo also lives in Tacoma Village.
We have a group of about four or five people who is part of their, what we call work share, or their part of the contribution to the community, every 2 weeks cleans the common house. And we have a specific person who cleans the bathrooms. And in between, people are expected to pick up after themselves when they use the common house.
Neighbors shape life inside their community through their imagination and participation. But Abe Hussein says not everyone seems interested in sharing the work.
One of the areas that I really had a lot of trouble with it is work share. The assumption here is that everybody will do some work. And most of the people do, but there are a few people who don't.
Charles Durrett and his wife, Catherine McCammont, helped bring the idea of co-housing to the United States.
My husband and I, we were young architects studying in Denmark, where we came across this idea, and it really intrigued us on both a personal level and a professional level.
They wrote about it in a 1988 book called Co-Housing. They recently published a second book, Creating Co-Housing.
It is the oldest idea about how people live together. And I think what we did was sort of take the Danish model and adapt it to an American model to our crazy modern 21st century lives.
Catherine McCammont says co-housing is about creating a better quality of life. She says co-housing also makes sense for economic and environmental reasons.
We've chosen to live in smaller houses with more community facilities and very energy-efficient houses. We live more sustainably. We use less of the Earth's resources, less energy, and drive less.
America's new poet laureate is Philip Levine. He is 83 years old and was born in Detroit, Michigan. Many of his poems celebrate the nation's industrial past and the struggle of working people. He was a factory worker in Detroit in the 1940s and 50s.
I remember when I worked for General Motors, sometimes people would come in being led on a tour. They're looking at us like we're in the zoo. I felt demeaned by it, and I also felt, here, I'm a smart guy, I'm not a moron, and I'm not living on my wits. I got to figure out a way to live on my wits because my back is getting tired, you know? And I did, finally. I did. I got out of it. I got out of it by publishing poetry.
Mr. Levine's subject matter has new meaning in today's difficult economy. His poem, What Work Is, was the title work of a collection that won him the National Book Award.
We stand in the rain in a long line waiting at Ford Highland Park for work. You know what work is. If you're old enough to read this, you know what work is, although you may not do it. Forget you. This is about waiting.
Mr. Levine and his wife of nearly 60 years, Frances, have an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. But they often stay at their home in Fresno, California, about 250 kilometers from the Pacific coast. In Fresno, he writes a different sort of poetry. Here is an excerpt from his poem, Our Valley.
We don't see the ocean, not ever. But in July and August, when the worst heat seems to rise from the hard clay of this valley, you could be walking through a fig orchard when suddenly the wind cools and for a moment you get a whiff of salt. And in that moment, you can almost believe something is waiting beyond the Pacheco Pass, something massive, irrational, and so powerful, even the mountains that rise east of here have no word for it.
Mr. Levine values silence. He even celebrates it in his poem called He Would Never Use One Word Where None Would Do. Here is poetry reader Alan Locos reading from that poem.
Fact is, silence is the perfect water. Unlike rain, it falls from no clouds to wash our minds, to ease our tired eyes, to give heart to the thin blades of grass fighting through the concrete for even air dirtied by our endless stream of words.
Philip Levine won a 1995 Pulitzer Prize for his collection, The Simple Truth. These lines, read by Alan Locos, are from the title poem.
Can you taste what I'm saying? It is onions or potatoes, a pinch of simple salt, the wealth of melting butter. It is obvious. It stays in the back of your throat like a truth you never uttered because the time was always wrong.
The Librarian of Congress, James Billington, appointed Philip Levine to follow W.S. Merwin as Poet Laureate. In that position, Mr. Levine says, he will do what he does when he writes a poem. He will not know where he is going. He will just follow his instincts.
A study has estimated that between one-third and one-half of all marriages in the United States are between people of different faiths. Jews are marrying outside their religion faster than members of other faiths. But some interfaith couples say they want to be true to both Christian and Jewish traditions. More than 100 families are members of the Interfaith Families Project. They meet Sunday mornings at a high school in Kensington, Maryland, near Washington. They have Jewish prayers. And Christian prayers.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, as it is in heaven.
And some things that belong to neither tradition. like singing a Beatles song. Then their children go into classrooms to learn about both Christianity and Judaism.
What do you see?
A star in the middle of an apple.
The teacher is Cindy Porhorilis. She is Roman Catholic. Her husband is Jewish.
We really try to honor both traditions, both sets of rituals, if you want to call it that, and the foundation of both religions.
Critics say there are limits to combining traditions. After all, Jews do not share the Christian belief that Jesus is the Son of God. At the same time, many parents in the Interfaith Families Project say they worry that their children will not be accepted by either religion. Angela Whitehead Quigley was raised Catholic. Her husband, David Quigley, is Jewish. They met in college.
Neither one of us was going to convert, that we both felt very strongly about our own faiths. And so we were really trying to find a place that we felt home. And that's what we found here.
Part of what I loved about her from day one was her Christianity. I assume part of what she loved about me from day one was the faith I had, the Jewish background.
Theology professor Chester Gillis at Georgetown University in Washington is writing a book. He hopes it will show interfaith couples how they can live with different beliefs in God.
If you marry someone from your own community, there's a common sympathy and understanding, a tradition, a culture, social events, family events that you're just familiar with. When you marry outside of that, you may not be familiar with those at all. It may be your first time celebrating Easter, or your first time celebrating Passover, or your first time celebrating Eid.
Two researchers, David Campbell at the University of Notre Dame and Robert Putnam at Harvard, published a study last year. They found that 1/3 to 1/2 of all marriages in the United States are interfaith. That could involve, for example, marriages between Catholics and Protestants. Recent waves of immigration have brought new groups of Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, and others into society. Americans are increasingly socializing with people outside their own faiths. The United States is sometimes described as the world's most religiously diverse nation. Religious leaders are under pressure to be more accepting of interfaith couples. Professor Gillis says the biggest challenge so far has been for Jews.
There's a fierce debate within Judaism as to whether this is a good phenomenon or not. Some, like the Harvard lawyer Alan Dershowitz, argues that this is the end of anti-Semitism, this is acceptance in the common culture, this is very good for Jews. And others argue, particularly in the Orthodox community and sometimes in the conservative Jewish community, no, this is the demise of Judaism.
Some people may wonder which religion a child of interfaith marriage will choose as an adult. 17-year-old Eli Kane says his education in the faiths of both his parents taught him to appreciate both religions.
I like the open-mindedness of Judaism. But I also like the sort of deep belief of Christianity. I guess I respect the deep belief of Christianity.
And what does he consider himself? His answer, interfaith. Our program was written and produced by Brianna Blake, from reporting by Faiza El-Masri, Adam Phillips, and Jerome Sokolowski. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. You can find transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for This Is America in VOA Special English.